Can you all hear me? Okay, thanks. I'll make sure I can hear you too. Hey Jim, you online? I've got those CDs for you as soon as I see you in person next time, okay? Okay, I think we're on record. Somehow I don't think that I'm hearing you distinctly. Jim, you online?
You're coming in good, Jerry.
Your speaker's not working, Jerry.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Jerry, you're coming in good.
Oh, I messed up that sweet spot.
Jerry, can you hear me?
Okay, let's try that. How's that sound?
You're
Sound what?
good, Jerry.
We can hear you good, Jerry. Can you hear us?
Okay, hang on a second. We're almost too loud now. Okay. I think I can
Jerry,
hear you. Can you
can you hear me?
hear me? Okay.
Hey, Jerry, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you.
Just a personal message to Jim. Jim, I've got those CDs next time I see you in person, okay?
Thank you, brother.
You're welcome. Okay, we're going to start the way we usually do. You can take a moment or so. You can close your eyes if you like. A couple of deep cleansing breaths. Relax, become teachable. Know that this is a sacred space and a sacred time. And let us, each one of us, open our hearts and our minds to learning whatever it is we need to learn this morning. With a sense of love and gratitude that we're all here together with the same purpose, same mindset, same reason for being here. Tune into the rhythm of your breathing, the beating of your heart. Know that our hearts are united in our yearning for peace, for joy, for happiness, for freedom from judgment, freedom from fear. You can take another deep breath. Open your eyes when you're ready. Welcome. I got a question for you guys. It occurred to me when I was driving here this morning, and it seems like it's going to fit into this morning's reading. I'd like to get your feedback first. Can you be in the upper room and drive your car at the same time? I see
Yes.
a bunch of
Yes.
heads nodding.
Yes.
Yeah. Don, what do you got?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. What's different between driving a car in the upper room and driving a car in lower consciousness?
They both get you there.
They both get you, both going, going, both get you there, and both going to the same place, seemingly.
take up less anxiety.
What I have been dealing with or working with is the idea of making everything I do sacred. Becoming real conscious, maybe more Zen-like in doing whatever it is I'm doing, to make that into a sacred space, a blessing, no matter what it is, whether it's cleaning the toilet, doing the dishes, cooking dinner, driving a car. I think anything we do can be an action or a reinforcement of the sacredness of life, including our own. So I'd just like you to sit with that one for a minute. You might recall that wonderful quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist teacher from Vietnam, who said, the next time you do the dishes, imagine that each dish is a little baby Buddha. So instead of just drying it off and throwing it in the cabinet, pick it up and you hold it nice and gently. This dish is a little baby Buddha. And how gentle I'm going to be, how mindful I'm going to be, how open I'm going to be, rather than just, I'm doing this task so I can get it done, so I can move on to something else. Imagine that each dish is a little baby Buddha. Imagine that each car that I pass, that a little baby Buddha is driving. Nobody's out to get me. Yeah, John.
Can I tell you a short story?
Sure.
While I'm driving home, somebody was telling me.
Can you guys hear him?
Yeah. So I'm driving home, like I do, you know, every day. And this person was on my bumper the entire way. And I'm on a country road, 45 miles an hour. There's people in front of me, and she's on my bumper. And, of course, it was at the end of the day, so I got pretty frustrated and stressed. So I had to pull into a gas station. So I pulled into a gas station, and she pulled into a gas station. And she pulled in right next to me, right? So I get out of my car, and I'm ready for back, you know?
Okay.
And she pulls out of her car and looks over at me like she had never even seen me. You know, she had no concept of I was full of rage. And she was somewhere else. And I thought, oh my God, what do I do now? And I thought, I just let it go.
Okay.
So she is somewhere else. You know, she's not in the present. You know, I didn't think of it.
She's not doing anything to me, right?
Right. Nothing really intentional. She was just in a different mode, a different space.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. But she was not in the same moment as I was
right
there. So, you know.
Interesting. There's a Buddhist story about a monk who's in a boat, a little rowboat, who wants to get to the other side of the lake. And it's a real foggy day, so his vision is limited. So he's kind of going as slow and as careful as he can be. And all of a sudden, he bangs into this other boat, or this other boat bangs into him. And he puts him in a rage about who is this idiot who's getting in my way, who's blocking my vision, who's bumping into my boat, blah, 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 blah. And he gets a little bit close to the boat that banged into him, and it's empty. There's nobody in it. And he went, oh, here I am being angry at nothing. Being angry at someone or something that doesn't even exist. Isn't that interesting? Just like the woman in the car. And so, you know, I could get another layer of being pissed off. She's being pissed off because she didn't even recognize me, right? But you kind of stopped it in its tracks. Say, okay, I've gotten as annoyed, as angry as I can be right now, right? I don't need to add anything more to the equation, right? Thank you. Thank you. That's a great way to start this morning. I didn't cheat. I didn't look forward, but it seems like today's lesson actually will be part of what we've already talked about. We're on, if you're following in the book, we're on page 68. And if you're not following in the book, that's perfectly okay because we'll read it out loud anyway. Oh, I forgot to mention this. I forgot to mention this in the letter that I send you every week. But first of all, I wanted to thank everybody for their continuing donations and support for this class on Sunday morning. I'll try and remember a little bit more often to remind you of that. The Sunday morning class, by the way, is the only one where we're asking for any kind of donation or love offering. Tuesday night and Friday night are, we call them freebies, right? There's no charge. Actually, there's no charge for this one unless you want to donate. It's all for open for a love offering. And that's just because Unity of Louisville supports this particular ministry. And we appreciate that from you guys. So I'm on page 68, right down at the bottom. Would you mind closing that door, Don? Thank you. All of a sudden it got quiet. Here we go. Now, the idea of the upper room, higher consciousness, we can call it. The idea of the upper room is a place where all things are made new, is for some of you a dream state, a fantasy landscape where your father did not die when you were young, where your wife did not leave, where things that happen as you wish. In many cases, what occurs in the upper room is that the demands that things be as they should be is released. When Margot first made her transition and I began sitting with my own grief, one of the first thoughts that came to my mind is, it shouldn't be this way. As silly as that sounds, because it already was, it shouldn't be this way. And I found myself not grasping that so much, but saying that fairly often in the process until I finally realized that whether it should or shouldn't be this way, it is this way. And that's what you're going to have to deal with. That's what you're going to have to work with. Where things happened as you wished. Doesn't happen that way. In many cases, what occurs in the upper room is that the demands that things be as they should be is released. Because the aspect of the self that shoulds is the aspect of self that has been born through history. In other words, it's Do you ever wind up telling stories in, to yourself in your head? Like Don with the car, right? You kind of make up a story about what's going on with this woman. Being so close, being, right on my tail, whatever my happens to be. And sometimes I find myself making up a story about the events in my life until I finally realize I'm just making this up. It's not real. It's happening up here, maybe. It's not happening in the outside world. In many cases, what occurs in the upper room is that the demands that things be as they should be is released because the aspect of self that shoulds is the aspect of self that has been born through history. When your attachment to outcome is released, that's a whole other thing, your attachment to the outcome. When you pray for something, when you align yourself to divine consciousness, what most of us do is we create an endpoint for that prayer or that alignment with divine consciousness, saying, okay, here's what I want, here's what I desire, here's the way it should be, here's the way I would like it to be. And I sort of create this scene, a scenario in my mind of here's my prayer, here's my desire, and here's what the outcome is supposed to look like. And what they're saying here is, please don't get attached to the outcome. You become attached to, it's only your small self, only your ego consciousness that gets attached to the outcome. It's not your higher consciousness that does that. Let go of what you think the outcome should be, and you will be open to all infinite possibilities. But as soon as you decide this is the way the prayer is supposed to be answered, you're kind of stuck in this realm over here, and you're missing all of the other possibilities that are happening over here. So it doesn't say don't pray, don't align yourself to divine consciousness, but let go of your predictions about what that's supposed to or how that's supposed to look. Because it's you by doing that to yourself, you're limiting your consciousness.
Hey, Jerry?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just right in alignment to, so every Friday afternoon, I have a FaceTime prayer session with a good friend of mine who's a prayer chaplain in Southern California. So he's always asking in terms of, okay, what do you want prayer for? What do you want prayer for? You know, then we pray and it's, you know, go about our way. So this past Friday, his name is John. He said, I said, John, can you pray for me, we'll pray together for acceptance of what is. And meaning that which I may have set the intention for, that which I am would like to occur, and I'm talking to myself as I'm asking for acceptance of what is, can I be content if it doesn't look like what I think it should look like? So the acceptance of what is was very was right on time for me, because I just needed to just kind of sit in that. And the thing that's so cool about that, you know, when I do that, because I can record it on my phone, and I'll play that throughout the week just to remind me acceptance of what is. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. In Christian scripture, there's a story of what I call the four friends, who bring their buddy who's paralyzed to Jesus to be healed. And by the time they get to the place where Jesus is at, he's standing in the doorway of this little house, and there's this big crowd around him. And there's no way that they can get their friend to bring him up to Jesus because the crowd's too thick. So one of them decides, let's go into the back of the house, we'll climb up to the roof, and we'll move some of the tiles over, and we'll let our friend down on the stretcher behind Jesus, and that way we can get away from the crowd and have Jesus heal our friend. So they do that. They go to the other side of the house, they move some of the tiles off the roof, and the four guys hold the ropes that are holding your friend down and move him, let go a little bit more, a little bit more, till he kind of close to touching the ground. You can imagine what it's like. Jesus turns around, sees this guy coming down from the ceiling, right? What's going on with these guys? But he knows already what they want. They want his friend to be healed. And so Jesus looks at the guy, the paralyzed guy who's in his stretcher, waiting to be healed, and looks at him and lovingly and says, "My son, your sins are forgiven you." My son, And I can imagine what's going on in this guy's head. That's not what I came here for. I'm paralyzed. I can't walk. I don't care about my sins being forgiven. All right. I want to walk again. And Jesus was one step ahead and said, but that you may know that the Son of Man has power on heaven as well as earth, I tell you, get up and walk. Which was the greater miracle? My son, your sins are forgiven you, or get up and walk? I often wondered what it would have been like to be that guy, let's say 6 months from now, or a year. When your attachment to outcome has been released, who you think you should be in the upper room, what the upper room is, you find yourself simply being and expressing at a level of tone where what you require is met by you in perfect ways. When I am not attached, my prayer is answered perfectly. Beyond what I might be able to think, beyond my mind, beyond my emotions, beyond my history. What you require is met by you in perfect ways. The docile nature that some of you hold seeks to command that this be about comfort. Yes, Don.
That sounds very familiar to the point you're talking about. Prayer. You have to let go of the outcome because it, to me, I see a similarity because the outcome, you're judging what the outcome should be. And it kind of sounds like they're saying the same thing about the upper room. You're supposed to, you're judging what the upper room would be. And they're saying, back off.
In the upper room, there is no judgment. Judgment is always a prerequisite of being in lower consciousness. Judgment, fear, any form of separation. That's a word they use quite often. Separation and judgment are the same thing. As soon as I judge, I kind of split myself off and I need to be here, but I'm over there someplace. And so what this is saying is, take a look at where you're at. As soon as you make a distinction, as soon as you judge something, including yourself, you are making yourself, thought-wise, you're making yourself separate from what the truth is, what's really going on. And so as soon as you feel that, as soon as you sense that, you can feel that emotionally, you can feel that physically even sometimes. As soon as you experience that sense of judgment or separation, right, stop. Take a breath. Let go. Let go. Say, I'm stuck in lower consciousness. Let me be free. Let me be open. Let me be free. What you require is met by you in perfect ways. Met by you in perfect ways. Did you get it? The docile nature that some of you hold seeks to command that this be about comfort. One of the strangest things Jesus said was, I have not come to bring you peace, but the sword. My meaning for that was that this trip that we are taking is not always comfortable. When you stretch, it's uncomfortable. When you expand yourself, your consciousness, when you meet the challenge to expand your consciousness, it sometimes is, maybe a lot of times, is uncomfortable. To command this about comfort, this is less about comfort and receptivity. Imagine your driveway is full of snow. You require a shovel or help with shoveling. You may discover the shovel that was hidden in the back of the garage, or the neighbor who comes by and offers a hand. You are not clamoring or frightened. You trust the source to meet those needs as they can be met by you. And if you must go to the garage, please do so and discover what might be there. There are lots of ways to clear the driveway. But in most cases, the driveway still needs to be cleared. So it might be help, might be, I might have a shovel myself. Friend or a neighbor might have a shovel. I might depend on somebody else to do it for me. What's a way through or a way out that allows me to be real, be safe, what the Buddhists call, you chop wood and you carry water. Rhonda?
So much easier for me, it's always been easier to give. Always giving myself. And I have trouble receiving. You know, when the universe does bring good, I have trouble. It's like, oh, I mean, I also don't serve. You know what I mean? And that for me is very, because it's a give and take. I mean, you have to have balance. So there's always an imbalance of judging everything for me. We're thinking I always have to be.
I've noticed that quite a bit as I grow, get older. That things I used to be able to do all by myself, that I can't do it all by myself. That, just as a, for instance, I asked Don and Laura a couple of weeks ago to help me hang some pictures in my room. A couple of years ago, I wouldn't have thought of asking somebody for help. I would have done it myself, and I probably would have done it okay. But what was really interesting was I picked up the hammer and I said, what am I doing? I can get help if I want it, and then I found out that I really do need it, right? Not just want it.
And
yeah. And
you relax and go out.
Well, you know, we enjoy helping another person. How about giving them the opportunity to help us? Again, like I said, that's certainly an aspect of getting older, not being able to do things the way we used to, but also that other side of things of letting somebody help me offers them the opportunity to feel good about themselves. Exactly. Difference between my ego and my higher self. My higher self doesn't mind about asking for help. In fact, it's a natural thing to happen. How can I do this well? How can I do this lovingly?
Jerry.
Yeah, John.
So I want to tell a story. We have neighbors that we didn't like. On both sides of the house. One of them had set off fireworks one day, or they do it every year, multiple times, and it had damaged the paint on one of our cars. They had taunted my wife for being Hispanic. They don't like me because I won't go drink with them. There's just all these reasons why we didn't like our neighbors on either side of the house. I have a heart condition and I can no longer shovel snow. And this past winter, when we got the biggest amount of snow, we watched the neighbors on both sides of the house shoveling their driveways and their walks. And it was, you know, we had been praying for them. We had changed our minds. We had been praying for them for some time. And when they finished their own driveways and walks, Both of them got involved in shoveling our driveway and our walks. And to me, what it changed was that we stopped judging and we prayed for them. So thanks.
As someone once said, prayer changes everything. And when I hold them without judgment, I open a space for them to be able to move in, which they did. They took advantage of the space that you created with non-judgmentalness and allowed that to, in physically anyway, remove the snow from the driveway. I created a space for them to be able to move in non-judgment, lovingness, whatever might happen to be. So it was a gift to you. It was also a gift to them at the same time, wasn't it? And see, we can't predict something like that. You know, if I said to myself, well, I'm going to pray for them, then they're going to shovel my driveway, right? Okay, it doesn't work that way, all right? Sounds good, but doesn't work that way. So you were doing this in a very non-judgmental, open kind of way, as a, I'm not asking them to do anything for me. But instead of focusing on separateness, or what I'm considering to be their separateness, I am opening myself up to prayerfully loving them wherever they are. And when I open that space up, it can be filled, it can be used to grant me my wish, but also help them at the same time. Great story, John. Thank you.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
That's a wonderful story by John. I mean, it's just that, I love that. The prayer, it was just a release, and he released that into the ethers. And there was no, like, well, if they do this, do that, you know, it was just a prayer, and voila, you know? That's awesome. That was awesome.
Thanks, man.
Jerry?
Yeah.
All this reminds me, and it's only been in the recent few years, because I get really attached to the way things should be and the way I want things to be. And when another one opens, and I have to tell myself in a loving way, you know, God didn't get you this far to drop you on your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to be good.
Okay, cool.
That's all.
Thank you for that, Bethany. Appreciate it. The docile nature that some of you hold seeks to command that this be about comfort. This is less about comfort than receptivity, openness to receiving what's coming to you. John, here's where you picked up the story. Imagine your driveway is full of snow. You require a shovel or help with shoveling. You may discover the shovel that was hidden in the back of the garage or the neighbor who comes by to offer a hand. You're not clamoring or frightened. You're not trying to control something. You're not doing something out of fear. You trust the source to meet those needs as they can be met by you. That sentence kind of encompasses most of today's lesson. You trust the source to be met those need to meet those needs as they can be met by you. And if you must go to the garage, please do so and discover what might be there. You trust the source to meet those needs as they can be met by you. That's another way of describing higher consciousness or being in the upper room. You trust the source to meet those needs as they can be met by you. And if you must go to the garage, please do so and discover what might be there. We'll do one more paragraph. The trajectory of this text we are in writing is embodiment, yes? But it is the fruition of embodiment at a level of tone when realization occurs. Just what John was talking about. Praying for someone or something without any strings attached, but something happens because of that prayer. The chapter on memory that we will be completing soon is in some ways a requirement for what comes after. Because as long as you are maintaining a sense of self, born in coherence with the false idea of who you are, and a false idea that the collective has foisted upon you or been in agreement with, you will be deterred. In other words, put very, very simply, right? As long as you are attached to lower consciousness, right, what you get will not be what you really want. Kind of that wonderful old Rolling Stones song, can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. Yeah.
My sister got cancer many years ago. We knew from medical information she had a year or two to live. I couldn't listen to people praying for her to get better. I would take a long walk and ask what's my part, because most the entire family, I had five brothers and sisters, and they had a hard time even talking to her because they couldn't handle, they don't have what I had at the time. So I would take a long walk. Yes. Well, I accepted that she is one of God. But I asked, what is my part? And my part was to ask for and have courage to go see her and not cry the whole time. And be strong and be open to what she needed right then and there whenever I went to see her. And the last time thing we did was, well, she went shopping with me one time and fainted. She went to a consignment store another time and bought me a tiny doll. And I still have it. She liked to shop. And then the last thing we did is it was close to Halloween. And she wanted to send address envelopes to all her friends happy Halloween, because I think she knew she wasn't going to make it to face. She had me highlighting all the little lightning bugs over the grass on the cars. She had about 20 cars. I was highlighting them. She fell asleep. My husband took her to bed. Asking for my car, you know, accepting what is and asking what am I supposed to do? I know I need help with it. Helped me. Because I had not done that, I would have missed a lot.
So your focus so much was not on you so much, but on her needs.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And being aware of that.
Yeah.
And trying not to make somebody else follow my agenda, but being willing to follow theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that perfectly. Because I remember that I went through some various stages of grief before Margot passed. And I remember this was probably a little bit after Thanksgiving, when she had moved over to, or was thinking about opening up hospice. And I remember remember my heart just feeling like it was breaking. And I remember crying and saying, "Don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave." And I swallowed, and I didn't go back to that place again. I went back to that feeling occasionally, but what I realized was, this is her journey, not mine. And a little bit after that, I remember her saying to me, she said, "I'm dying, aren't I?"
Hello.
I said, "Yes." She said, "You're leaving your body. You're getting ready to leave your body, and that's okay." And she was okay with that, and I was okay with that. I was still grieving, but I was okay with it. And it put both of us in a very, very different space as compared to "Don't leave me, don't leave me."
So it'll be 800. That's for the kennel. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I think we need to close. So if you might mind, you can put your stuff down.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes for a minute. Wow. Did some soul journeying today, didn't we? Yeah, you're right, Jay. Touch your heart. Close your eyes for a moment. Put your stuff down. Take a couple of deep breaths. Just allow yourself to be in that spaciousness that you've created with your own consciousness, created for each one of us, created for all of us. The rhythm of your breath, the beating of your heart. The openness to non-judgmentalness and unconditional love. That we have been gifted with this morning. And know that you take this with you. This sense of gratitude, of healing, of unity consciousness, of being one with the universe, being one with one another. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you for all for being here. Hope you have a wonderful rest of the weekend. I love you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Love you too, Jerry.
I gotcha.
Sure.
Yes.